Hey there, thanks for listening to CantoCast. I'm CantoCast Blue, and CantoCast is your destination for all kinds of Pokemon and gaming entertainment. CantoCast is a podcast. Of course, you already knew that, but I also do 5 to 6 live streams a week over at twitch.tv/CantoCast, and I have other video projects going on over at youtube.com/c/CantoCast, including Let's Plays, VGC tutorials, Pokemon battles, and more. If you're loving what CantoCast is doing, hit up a pledge on Patreon or come subscribe over on Twitch. By supporting the content, you help support not only me and my family, but also my aspirations to continue to make content for everyone to enjoy. All the links you'll need for any of that will be in the episode description. And with that, please enjoy the latest episode of CantoCast. Welcome to CantoCast NPA Special Edition Week 3 and 4. I'm Blue. If you didn't know, if you're a normal listener, then you already knew that because this is, you know, coming straight to your podcast listening preferential device slash app slash website slash whatever as per normal. But if you're watching over on the NPA channel, This is a special edition of CantoCast that we're running with the NPA because I'm in it, and I know that, you know, it's we talk about it. It's fun, but I'm not alone. I am joined by an old time friend. I slipped old in there just for, you know, the sake of reference. Old man Tup, who is not so old to me, but. Beloved Man Tup. I'm going to call you Beloved Man Tup for the rest of this episode. Tup, tell us what's going on.
What is hatching, Togepeeps? Old Man Tup coming at you today with our special NPA edition of the Kanto Cast. Excited to be back again after oh so long.
We were actually talking for a while before this got started. And I haven't said, Tup, I've missed you. It's been so long since I've heard that intro over here.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. So Tup is back. Tup, tell me what you've had going on, man. This is gonna be a super casual thing. Like, we've been very obsessed with stats and things like that. It's not gonna be like that this time around, fam. So buckle in for some casual league talk.
Yeah. Before we get super league-ish, there most recently was the Token Minorities March Madness tournament. That the NPA, if I'm not mistaken, was for the first time invited to join the All-Star Division. And Joe Dore and myself both entered. I was able to make it through the pools into the bracket round. And out of 240 competitors, which I believe was the largest turnout they've ever had for TTM, I managed to crack the top 32, which was really nice. Joe Dore just fell short of making brackets to some stat shenanigans that we won't get into. But it was really fun. For those of you who aren't familiar with the setup, there is the All-Star Pool, which takes coaches from all the popular leagues. And there is a Open Pool. The Open Pool is by application. Anybody can enter. Everybody battles a round-robin-style tournament. The best records from each of the pools get selected to move on to the bracket rounds. And then just awesomeness ensues. You get to have quick somewhere from 6 to 8 mon drafts with 10 people in each of your pools to draft from. So you can end up with some pretty ridiculous drafts, and it's a lot of fun.
See, I didn't know anything about this. I remember getting posted in the NPA Discord if anybody from the NPA wanted to pop in, And I was like, I have no idea what this is, but I'll probably shame myself and my countrymen, so I'm not going to bother. but you stepped up. I'm proud of you, Tub. That rhymed. I didn't intend for that to happen, but...
You didn't know it.
Didn't Joe miss it by, like, one differential?
Something like that. So like I said, it was just a really weird stat that just kept him right out of it.
That's a bummer. We love you, Joe. I'm sorry that happened to you. That's like, in my world, that's like bubbling out of top cut by like 0.5% of resistance, which has happened to me, and it hurts real bad. I can only imagine this is pretty close to what that feels like. Oh, man, that's a bummer.
Yeah, the overall stats to get in are a little bit different from what I was familiar with, because head-to-head is considered before overall differential. So we could have the same record in our pool, and you could have 10 more positive differential than me, but if our records are the same and I beat you in pool play, I get put in over you.
Oh.
It's a different setup, which I didn't know that going in, but it turned out that's actually how I won my pool. I played Moxie and Fernape, we had the same record, but I beat him in pool play. He had a better differential than me. We both went forward, but I got top seed and he took second from our pool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, because I was confused, because top seed from the All-Star pools gets a bye through the round of 64. And I'm like, he has a better differential than me. Why is he playing the round of 64 and I'm getting sent to 32? And then I talked to Jolt, and he was like, it gets head-to-head before actual differential in that instance.
Huh. Curious. I mean, so that's not the norm, right? Normally it's differential overall?
The best of my knowledge it is.
Okay. I thought that's the way that it was too, but, you know, I don't sports very often, so I'm not 100% sure how things are typically handled, but that's crazy. Well, hey, I mean, it worked out in your favor, right? Honestly. I guess I could see that kind of making sense if you're, because, you know, when you're in something that large, when you're in that big of a pool, I feel like the teams are probably highly impacted by play. So, like, you know, it theoretically, despite differential, you theoretically had a stronger team than the person who you beat but had higher differential than you, because maybe their pool was better. I don't know. That's the only way I can rationalize it, but it feels very foreign to me. Like, that doesn't feel like the way it should go.
Right.
Numbers, man. We have numbers for a reason. But that's cool. Did you see any interesting teams while you were in it?
Fairly standard-ish for league format. There were a few that had some interesting things. That's the round I got knocked out. I got absolutely wrecked by Scarf Pelipper. And it's just like, you know, but I mean, I didn't have an answer for it. Between Hurricane and Drizzle boosted freaking Surfs, he'd come in, kill something, I'd get something in to scare it out, and it was just a vicious cycle towards the end of the match. I ended up losing 1-0. But, yeah, it was sad.
I mean, so I have kind of, like, I can identify with that. When I was playing at the Worlds Open in San Francisco, or not San Francisco, Anaheim, that's where it was, last year, in doubles or in VGC, like, you don't often see, specifically in VGC, you don't often see, like, dual screens, which, you know, is relatively common in singles for the most part, because, you know, it's not quote-unquote wasting a turn when you're setting up in singles. But, dude, I'll tell you what, I got knocked out in a best of three in, like, 4 minutes, just because I did not respect dual screens Feeny in the team build. So I can imagine that's kind of what Scarf Pelipper feels like. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, I was just prepping speed tier wise, and it never occurred to me. I mean, granted, in the same match, I had a Scarf Tapu Fini, which beat it in the end, but it was just one of those things where I was building. I didn't even anticipate that speed tier number coming into effect with a Scarf Pelipper.
True. Yeah. I've noticed, like, now that I'm taking team building more seriously with, like, singles, it's, you start to see these base speeds that you're like, oh, yep, that's definitely a Scarf. Pelipper isn't really one of those, necessarily. So I can, I get where you're coming from on that. How did you guys actually draft the teams? Because that's an interesting, how does that work?
I only see what I'm given access to on the Discord for the TTM tournaments, but it must be just absolutely enormous because they put each draft pool, which was 10 people, into an individual chat that only they can see, and you draft among those 10 people.
Huh.
Snake format. It's a budgeted draft, so you only have so many points. Each Pokemon is given a point value. Don't have to draft a Mega if you don't want to.
Ooh.
It's one of my preferred draft styles because I don't like being forced to take a Mega. Because a lot of teams I build do better without one.
Mm-hmm.
But that was more or less the draft scheme of it.
Yeah, I can identify. Like, with the MPA this season, I waited. Which I know you respect my Mega pick, because you, like, immediately messaged me afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
which was very much appreciated, because I wasn't sure how that would go over. But, I waited until, late halfway through the draft just to pick up Mega Pidgeot. Because I was like, I'm not really concerned about a Mega Pokemon, you know? Like, it's good, don't get me wrong. Like, Pidgeot's come to pretty much every game so far, I think, that I've played, but... after a handful of Megas, I'm like, oh man, I'm really jonesing that one, you know, like I really want this on my team, and then it's gone. I'm like, well,
yeah,
there's other stuff that I would rather prioritize, I guess is where it's coming from. Cause I mean, really, like there are some Mega Pokemon that just, I don't know, like, you know what they're going to do, right? Mega Manectric is, I think, a really... a big proponent of usually like Overheat or Flamethrower. It's gonna have Volt Switch, probably Hidden Power Ice, and then like Thunderbolt or something like that, right? Like you kind of know what's gonna come from it, like what it's gonna have. Right. I feel like Pidgeot's kind of the same thing, right? Hurricane and Heat Wave, guaranteed, like almost every single time. But I mean, it's got some cool tech. I'm liking it. Which Mega did you actually pick? We haven't chatted in a while.
I got Mega Beedrill for the NPA.
And oh, that's right.
Actually, what I took in the TTM tournament also. I have it and absolutely love it. And like you said, it's one of those Pokemon that has a very niche set that you almost always see the same thing outside of maybe 5 to 6 moves. But I mean, it's just so fast and just so powerful. I mean, adaptability U-turn coming from base 150 attack stat is just ridiculous.
Dude, that's crazy. All right. I'm trying to find. I'm gonna find your. There you are. I'm gonna find you in the dock here because I'm genuinely not familiar at all with Mega Beedrill's stats. I just know that it's amazing. Oh my god, dude.
Yeah, 145 base speed.
It
outruns almost all of the fastest things that you think, oh, this outruns everything.
Is that faster than Mega Lopunny?
Yes.
Because that's 135, right? I think it is.
I don't remember exactly what it is, but I think I played Mega Lop in the tournament, and I outsped it. I had to be careful of fake outs, because that was the only way it could really touch me.
We're going to find it, like, right now. Yeah, dude, it's 135. Holy cow. That is crazy. I had no idea it was that fast.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
Well, it's one of the Pokemon that were megas that people sleep on because it was so bad before Gen 7 because it didn't get the instant speed boost.
Yeah.
But now that it goes from like whatever its base speed is Beedrill like 80 to 145 instantly, it's like, ooh, one of the fastest U-turns in the game.
Base 80 Spidef's not bad either, honestly.
No.
I mean, it's not great, but that's not terrible.
Oh, right, but you're not banking on it to survive hits. You're banking on it to come in, U-turn, or revenge kill something.
Dude, that is absolutely insane.
Let me tell you something about Mega Beedrill that I absolutely went nutso about during the TTM tournament. I was watching Joe play, and he had actually drafted Mega Beedrill himself. And it looked like he was out of a match completely. I think he just had Mega Beedrill left. And I was listening to the commentators on the TTM Twitch. And they're like, well, Joe Dorr's done. There's no way Mega Beedrill can one-shot this and this and this. Joe fell-stingered whatever was in front of it, got the attack boost, and just swept the rest of the team.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Felstinger. That's hot.
But I mean, you got Felstinger, which I think is like base 60 speed. But again, you have adaptability, which boosts that even further. And is pretty much a free swords dance at that point. And you get to kill something.
I like it. I've not seen much Felstinger action. I know it exists. That's been around. When did Felstinger come in? Was that 6 or 7?
I want to say 6 gen.
Okay.
Because I think Mega Beedrill had it the generation it got the Mega. But it was just one of those moves that you'd never see anybody run.
It was Gen 6. That is correct. Huh. That's cool. Yeah, only a handful of Pokemon actually get it. So those of you who sleep on Quillfish, don't.
Yep.
Or Vespiquen, I guess, technically, if you want to get real fancy with it. Parasect, man. Parasect's coming back, I'm telling you what.
Yep.
Felstinger Parasect. Oh, man. Well, that's exciting. I mean, you got to top 32. Represented the NPA. You and Joe both had Mega Beedrill on your team, so that's like slowly becoming the new NPA mascot, I think. That's what it sounds like.
It was weird. We compared our teams after the draft because we don't see each other's teams during the draft. We both had Mega Beedrill, we both had Mamoswine, and both of our teams were highly dependent on pivot bonds. It's like, well, we got a good shot going through this. Because my team, this was my third time competing in a TTM tournament like this. I had done March Madness in the Summer Showdown in 2017. And this was, the team I had drafted was a conglomerate of the two teams I had used before. The Summer Showdown was my best showing that I had done, and I cracked Sweet 16. And I liked that team so much. What I had drafted this season, or this round, was an adaptation of that team.
Well,
it's nice.
I feel like you got to stay somewhat within your comfort level in a tournament like that, you know,
because
it seems relatively kind of fast paced. So you don't necessarily want to pick up something that you're unfamiliar with. And you're like, oh, what do I do with this thing? You know what I mean? Like, you got to comfort level is big just in draft in general. That's mainly the reason why I drafted the way I did this season. But yeah, it's especially when you have like, cause we have a week to figure stuff out. And you know, if you start sooner, then you have even longer, but, we've got a week to get matches in, and it's comforting knowing that like, oh, well, I'm at least familiar with this stat spread, or, you know, I know my survival rate on this because you know, I've seen it for umpteen times already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, comfort level's pretty big. I'm a fan. Well, that's cool. I mean, congratulations. That's pretty hype.
Oh, thank you.
Got in there. I mean, because there were a lot of teams. So, top, you know, 32 is not bad. Not to me, for me, anyway. I think that's pretty freaking hype. Let's get into the NPA weeks 3 and 4, as this episode is so dutifully titled. We had some mix-ups happen this you know, these 2 weeks of plays, man. Like everything was there were some shakeups, we'll say, not mix-ups per se, but shakeups. I'm gonna run through and just briefly mention the scores of the teams, as I love you guys, and I like to challenge myself as to whether or not I can talk for extended periods of time. So we had the Predators coming in week 3 with an 0-1 loss, but then rebounding like a G with a 5-0 win. The Pelipers coming in taking a 4-0 in week 2 over Detroit, and then a 3-0 in week 4. The Druthigans coming in with a 1-0 win on week 3 and then a 6-0 win week 4. I'm sure we'll talk about that, because that was me. And the Sharpedos, Southampton Sharpedos, coming in. Double loss this week. Week 3, we had an 0-2 and an 0-4 in week 4. The Adelaide Honchcrows coming in. Week 3, 2-0. Week 4, 0-4. And then Detroit, we had an 0-1 for week... Well, 0-4 for week 3, and then an 0-1 for week 4. So the Detroit Steel Wings not doing all that great. It's a little rough. It's a little rough for them. We got Pittsburgh. You know who them Pittsburgh Pirates are. Week 3, coming in with an 0-1 loss. Just barely missing it, man. Just barely missing it. I feel you on that. And then week 4, coming in with a 3-0 win. That's right. We're going to talk about that for sure. South Texas Sableyes coming in week 3, 0-1. Week 4, 0-2. So, you know, could be better. Week 3 for the Chicago Cub 2s taking a 1-0 win and an 0-2 loss in week 4. The Seattle Sea Kings coming in at 0-2 in week 3 and 2-0 in week 4. So, you know, some nice symmetry happening right there. We got the two Canadians, which I am saying correctly this time around, coming in week 3, 2-0 win, week 4, 0-3 loss. We're almost there, fam. I'm doing it. I haven't really messed up yet. Proud of myself. The Minnesota Vikavolts, fan favorites for sure. 1-0 win week 3 and an 0-4, or an 0-1. See, there it was. 0-1 loss in week 4. I got cocky. Don't get cocky.
Jinxed it.
That's how you mess it up. We had the Rochester Ride-Ons taking a week 3 0-4 loss and a week 4 0-5 loss. So not looking great there at the moment, but I'm sure they'll bring it back. The Thunderous coming in week 3 taking an 0-2 loss and an 0-3 loss in week 4. The Topo Coco Puffs, best name. Crunchy even milk. Coming in week 3, taking a 4-0 win and an 0-6 loss in week 4. The Lancaster Castworms, who is a relatively newer team. You guys remember Poke. He was on last time. Coming in week 3, 0-2 loss and a 4-0 win in week 4. Straw Hat Swamperts, week 3, taking a 2-0 win and a 4-0 win in week 4. Lots of 4-0s in week 4. I'm noticing this. There's definitely a pattern here. The Maryland Tor Terrapins, week 3 coming in 2-0, and week 4 coming in 1-0. That was actually a pretty good match. We'll talk about that for sure. Munchlaxter United. That Munchlax, man. Coming in 0-4, week 3, and 0-3, week 4. New York Clinks coming in week 3, 3-0. And week 4, 2-0. The Miami Donphans coming in 4-0 week 3 and 2-0 week 4. The Colorado Rapidash week 3 coming in, succeeding a 3-0 win and then a a 0-2 loss in week 4. The Orlando Magikarps coming in week 3, 0-3, and week 4, 3-0. So again, some nice symmetry there. I'm glad it's very soothing to see numbers just mirrored like that. Week 3 for the Tampa Bay Lux Rays coming in with an 0-3 loss coupled by a 1-0 win in week 4. So there you go. There were a couple interesting ones that I wanted to talk about there. Tup, why don't you start us off with how you did in your weeks 3 and 4, cuz you had some close wins and then you actually picked up your first win so far, which was week 4.
We played Galactic Elliot and the Chicago Cub Chews, which was a game that Elliot and I have been talking about for just about forever, because we've been friends for quite some time but never actually in a league together. So that was a very anticipated match. That match versus him, I got to show why Lorantis is not to be underestimated as I ran through a couple mons early in the game, but he was able to squeak it out at the end with a very deadly rock-polished Dawn fan, which just kind of wrecked shop at the end of the match. And then I played Munchlaxer United, and I believe that's King Bub's team.
Mm-hmm.
And we played week 4, and very good match, War of Attrition. Empoleon getting 2 big kills on his water mons, which I was very happy with. Slacking, netting 2 kills. Don't sleep on slacking, kids. But yeah, that was the first league victory I'd had in a major league in a long time. Because for those of you who don't know, I went winless in my last season of the GBA. So I had been hunting for a W for quite some time. So actually getting one was extremely satisfying.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah, I cried a little bit.
I would have too. My weeks are going downhill from here, but we'll get on that in a second. So, you haven't really had, there was that week 1 where, you know, the Predators, who kind of just dominate everybody anyway, came in and gave you some hassle, but you've had some really close games, dude, especially that 1-0 with Elliot. Holy cow. That's crazy. That is absolutely crazy. So was there anything with the Munchlaxer that you were kind of like, well, I'm pretty confident that this is coming, or, you know, this is the obvious play here?
Well, as was previously stated in the weekly breakdown or the pick'ems or whichever it was on the analysts, that in my match, 100% Tangrowth was coming, because it is one of the hardest checks to Zygarde Snake. So I knew that was coming. So the front office cooked up a specially offensive Zygarde set with Sludge Wave, Grass Knot, and some other things, because a lot of his bulkier mons, namely Tangrowth, Suicune, Clefable, all get hit pretty hard with a Life Orb boosted Grass Knot and Sludge Wave.
There you go.
But the team that had the Megalopony that I was worried about with Mega Beedrill with those huge fake outs. But Megalopony fell in like the first 5 turns of the match. He left it in on Lorantis, and I just started setting up contrary superpowers and wrecked its face.
That's a little bit heartbreaking. As a big proponent of Megalopony, that hurts my heart a little bit. That's actually, we were just talking about megas and prioritizing like 10 minutes ago. Megalopony was my priority mega. Like, I was like, all right, if I can get that,
yeah,
I'm taking it immediately. But I think it got drafted like first round, so I'm not really surprised by that.
Not bitter. We were a little late in the first round.
Yeah, right. We were right next to each other. Yep. You were 22, I think. I was 23. Rough. Although, not as rough as, like, coming in week three, replacing a coach. We were talking about that with Poke last week, or not last week, but last episode for the special edition. Like, that's got to be maybe more nerve-wracking, I think. Because, you know, you're taking over somebody else's team, and you're like, oh, hey, I didn't draft you. Let's see how this goes. But yeah, man, late game draft, you know you're not getting the good stuffs. You're gonna get some secondary good stuffs, like Tapu Bulu, poor Bulu. I love Bulu, yeah, but it's not the superior Tapu in this format anyway, for sure. I mean, there's not a whole lot of switch-ins sometimes. Like, if you don't have a Bulu switch-in, he's just gonna woodhammer your face. Speaking of switch-ins, let's talk about, see that transition there? I'm a professional, you guys. I know what I'm doing.
You turned right out of there.
I did. Oh! Top. I'm giving you the pun award. Top pun right there. the Detroit Maryland game between the Type Nulls and the Torterapins. Mega Heracross. If you guys didn't see that game, that was week four, and that's one I wanted to highlight. Because I, you know, I do. I try and watch all of them, but, you know, there's a lot of games, man. There's 24 teams, and, you know, if you don't watch both sides, that's still 12 games, a lot of games. Yes. But the Detroit-Maryland game was one that I did get a chance to see, and it was a 1-0. But, man, the Detroit led with, I don't remember who they led. But it was they were not expecting a Mega Heracross lead, and that's exactly what Kelly did. It was like, I think Crimson's words were actually, well, time to pick a sack, because there was like, if there's not like, Mega Heracross is one of those things. I'll never draft it again because it missed a pin missile, in a very important game for me against Hank the Pidgey way back when, and I was just like, no, I've been betrayed. I should have had that. I'm never picking Mega Heracross again. But this just goes to show, like, man, some of these wall breakers, dude, like, you do not have switch-ins. And Mega Heracross is one. It gets, you know, your Sashmon, like, you don't even have a Sashmon to send in. Like, maybe, right, best case scenario, right? You have something that's super fast and hits really hard, and you can Sash it. Great. Pin Missile. Rock Blast. Arm Thrust, all very, very good coverage moves, two of which are stab, and all five, like, all three of them are going to hit five times in a row because of skill link. I mean, dang, dude. Yeah, that was a barn burner. If you guys didn't get a chance to see that game, go check out Under the Radar or Crimson Seabed and watch it. That was week four. Crimson had to pull back, dude. Like, it was crazy. It came down to Pillow Swine in the end. The little swine that could just barely missed it. I think there was a Healing Wish on Celebi, and it brought Landorus Therian back in at full. So he couldn't Ice Shard his way to victory, unfortunately, at that point. But yeah, man, that was... Whew. As soon as Heracross turn one hit the field, I was like, oh no. And then Crimson had a very similar reaction, where he, you know, had to switch in Altaria, which, you know, did not appreciate anything because it was two hit KO by a lot of stuff. But yeah, man, that was props to Crimson, though. Like, we haven't really seen a win from the Type Nulls yet. I say that yet because I'm a believer. But man, like, a 1-0 in that situation, dude pulled it back. Dude, that dude played well, and he definitely tried to pull back. So props to him on that.
Yeah, he's played close matches. I mean, his only big losses are to some of the top contenders right now. I mean, he got 5-0'd by the Nashville Predators, which, I mean, I did too. And so have a lot of other teams. I mean, Redithin's just tearing it up right now. He got 4-0'd by the New Orleans Pelipper's, and I think John is still undefeated at this point in the season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, his big losses aren't to scrub teams. So, I mean, he isn't playing bad. He, like you said, he's just still thirsting for that first W.
He's, yeah, like, I'll go through and compare, because every week, right, I'm like, oh my god, this matchup is terrible for me, or, oh my god, why is this happening? Looking at Crimson's schedule, holy lord, that dude's getting run through the gauntlet right now, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. He's got a tough schedule. He's got a rough schedule. And I think that's something that maybe, doesn't get thought about enough, maybe, is what I'm trying to say. When you look at, like, the overall records, which, you know, for time constraints is kind of all the technical talk that we can do over here. Again, plug for the MPA YouTube channel if you want to see more in-depth coverage on statistics and whatnot. But, like, I don't think we really look at the schedule of the players. Because you can look at team matchups and stuff like that, but... there is not to insult anyone, because I'm definitely within this pool. There's a level of play that differentiates between all the teams, and I'm not saying anybody is like good or bad, but there's definitely a high level of experience with some of the teams, like John, for example. I mean, there's a reason why he's 4-0. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
The dude has been around a while. He's played some Mons before, you know what I mean? And he's very comfortable.
You throw him all the way back to the first or second season of the GBA. So, I mean, he has been in draft format pretty much since day one.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's all good and well. Like, you can talk about teams and, like, who has good matchups and stuff like that. But and this is something that I relate to within the video game championships. It's like when you come across a seasoned player who on top of that is running something that they're comfortable with, or they, you know, they have a good team, or, you know, the comfort level there, whatever you want to call it. It can be really challenging, because you don't know, like, what kind of shenanigans they're going to bring, you know, like, I don't know. You don't really expect, like, there are some things you don't expect. One of which is something that we'll talk about now. We'll share my shame publicly here. So first of all, the Rochester Ride-Ons, the week three game, we got a 4-0, right? I want to preface this by saying at the end of week three, we were number one in the league. I'm going to preface that. Okay. All right. That's important for clarity's sake. Ended up getting 6-0'd by the Druddigans, because well, here's the thing. I'm not making excuses, but we'll look at the team here as soon as I can pop it up. There it is. Alright, so we went through this in the team builder, but the Druddigans have, like, some really scary stuff, like Manaphy, Mamoswine, the Slurpuff, Mega Gullet. There's a lot of, like, setup potential on that team, right? And when you're looking at half a team that has setup potential, there's only so much you can prep for. I knew that Slurpuff would be coming. And for those of you that haven't seen it yet, spoiler alert, Unburden sub Slurpuff is what ultimately granted me a painless death. The thing that really caught me off guard, honestly, was I don't know if the Manaphy was scarfed, but it had U-turn, and I wasn't expecting Manaphy to be a pivot mon, which is honestly all it used. Like, it came in, I think, three times during our game, and it U-turned out every single time.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is it can be used to get good positioning, which is what it did, or if you switch out predicting that it's going to do that, it's going to set up on your face with a tail glue. And then, you know, like, what does someone do then? So that's the situation I kept having to deal with. I felt like I was really well prepared. I really, really did. Except for that Manaphy situation. We had the Dazzling Gleam on the top of Bulu, which was kind of a fun little tech for the Druddigan, because I knew that thing was coming. The Gung Shot threat was real. The Gung Shot threat was real. Never missed one, by the way. Gung Shot showing up in spades there. But yeah, man, like that's the scary part about this team, right? It's the Manaphy that can Tail Glow, it's the Mamoswine that can, you know, it can be Life Orb, it can be Scarf, it can be Banded, it's got priority. There's a lot of scary stuff. And even with the Zatu, like the Zatu on 6 feet Haxxus team is something you have to consider, just because, you know, even if you try and like set something up like Rocks or Toxic Spike or whatever, it's got that magic bounce. So there, like even when you're trying to gain positioning, there was a lot to think about in the team build for that, and ultimately it just came down to, well, he was just gonna get Slurpuff in and then body rock me, because like once Slurpuff gets that Unburden, unfortunately for my speed tiers on my team, I didn't have anything that could outspeed it, which is a bummer. But hey, you know, it is what it is. I even said in my video for that battle, it was very humbling, because you know, we were undefeated up to that point. We were first. We were living the high life, and then, you know, that comes around and kind of makes you appreciate life just a little bit more, I think.
Yeah.
But I mean, it happens, you know. You bounce back. I'm not really all that salty about it. There was nothing I could really do, honestly, at that point. Like, I expected the Belly Drum. I didn't so much anticipate the sub.
Yeah.
So the U-turn Manaphy and the sub Slurpuff was maybe something I didn't give enough consideration to. I was so focused on the setup of Tail Glow or Belly Drum that I didn't really consider any other support options that they might have had, like the sub or the U-turn, stuff like that. But
yeah,
it's scary
stuff. Well, I mean, there's no shame in losing to Leo. Leo's another guy who's been around the format forever, and is just a fantastic player. He just won the most recent rendition of the GBA D-League. He was champion of that. So, I mean, he is a seasoned, weathered, he knows how to build teams to destroy teams guy.
That makes me feel a little better. not a lot, but a little better. I mean, like looking at his schedule, you know, he's 4-0'd somebody else. He's been 6-0'd by Elliot. Good Lord, Elliot. Somebody nerf Elliot, please.
Yeah.
It needs to happen. I play him next week, actually. It's scary.
Nice.
That's because we were talking about that, right? He's right between you and I.
Yeah.
It was a Tup and Blue sandwich for Elliot. I'll let those of you listening, I'll let that simmer in your mind for a hot minute. Yeah, dude. Absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. Were there any other games that you thought, wow? Because I like I said, you know, there's a lot of games to watch. I don't know if there was one that stuck out to you at all.
Not that are coming to mind. One that surprised me, I guess, more than any other, was Tampa Bay Luxrays pulling out that 1-0 squeaker over the Minnesota Vikavolts.
Oh, because yeah. Because
until that point, the Luxrays had been winless. And to beat a former season champ who drafted Mega Mawile, Salamence, and a bunch of other disgusting crap is fantastic.
Which, Dan was also undefeated up until that point, I think, right? Yeah. He was 3-0 going into week 4.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely an upset, for sure. Let's see. Actually, what did happen? I didn't get a chance to see that game. So the Vikavolts brought Mega Mawile, Salamence, Alolan Ninetales, Silvally, Seismitoad, and Virizion. Oh my god, dude.
Yeah.
What the heck? Oh man, let's see. The Luxray's,
they had Kingdra, Pelipper, Bronzong, Thunderous Eye, Shaymin, and Mega Swampert. So I mean, they brought the rain strong.
I might, you know what? I might go back and watch that now, because I'm assuming that Dan brought the Alolan Ninetales to disrupt the weather. So there had to be like a bunch of crazy switches and pivoting going on with all that.
Yeah.
Especially in an 0-1. Because you would assume if, you know, if one team just got their weather up, or I know Dan digs the screens with Aurora Veil. Or not Aurora Veil. What is that? What is that move that Ninetales uses?
Aurora Veil.
Is it Aurora Veil?
Yeah.
I'm tripping. Don't listen to me.
The move that the hail has to be up for, because I've made that mistake before.
Oh, no. That's like going for a fake out in psychic terrain, which I know those of you guys listening are probably like, oh, Tapu Lele is banned, so we never have to worry about that. Yeah. It happens a lot in VGC, particularly. Same with like Will-O-Wisping or toxicking something that's in misty terrain. That's probably more relevant for you guys, but yeah, man, it's dang. That one must have been a barn burner too. I'm gonna give recommendations. Go watch the Luxrays versus the Vikavolts, and the Torterra Pins versus the Type Nulls. Those are my official recommendations for you guys. go watch those week 4 games. Don't worry about my week 4. That's not important. Don't go. that's not worth your time. Even though I made some relatively okay predictions, just not enough. That's fine. Go watch those two games instead. Also, the Luxrays have Heracross, so you get double the Heracross. I don't think they brought it. They did not bring it, but that's okay. Heracross deserves some love.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I'm glad you brought that up. I wouldn't have even thought of that one. But that's pretty insane. So that means at the end of those, we've only got one team that's undefeated, I think.
Yeah, I think it's just the Pelippers going into week 5, I think.
Ooh, that's pressure.
Yeah.
That is some pressure, man. And you know, when I got 6-0'd by Slurpuff, it hurts to say that, but it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, my initial reaction was, okay, I'm not undefeated anymore, so the pressure is just kind of... It's nullified almost. Because for me, like, my whole thing going into this was, I'm going to draft something I'm comfortable with. I'm going to get incredibly stressed out over the games, because that's how I play Pokemon. I get incredibly stressed, and I take years off of my life in the process. And then, you know, no one's really going to expect a whole lot from me, and so I'm comfortable with that. But I feel like, you know, when you go 3-0... you start to develop kind of an earlier target on your back. But now, yeah, now that I've been 6-0'd, I feel like people are like, oh, okay. Well,
yeah,
nothing to see here. Let's move on. It's a little more comforting, you know? I like to fly under the radar.
Like Kelly.
I was going to say, no pun intended, but... Oh, man, there it is. So, I mean, it's getting interesting. There's some teams that are kind of thirsting for some wins there. The Type Nulls, I think, is it Munchlaxter? Are they? Oh, no, they got a 4-0 win in week 2. Yeah, so they're...
That's what I was going to say. I think every other team has one victory by week 4.
So we got one undefeated team and one one that's yet to break out with a performance here.
Winless.
But again, to note that some of these guys, like I think Crimson's in like 3 leagues right now.
Yeah.
Which is like, first of all, keeping your own team straight between that and then prepping for like 3 other different teams with 3 of your own different, that's
too much for my
it's too much.
Yeah.
Too much for me, man. No.
That's one of the harder things that I didn't realize was going to be a side effect when I was in the March Madness tournament, was I built 6 different teams over the span of 3 days and then had a league match during that time as well. And it's like, okay, what build was this for? Because a lot of my teams overlapped, even between my MPA and the team that I drafted for March Madness. It's like, why did I have this speed investment on this thing? And it's fairly evident in my team builder.
Oh, dude, yeah. I mean, that's happened to me just prepping week to week. I'm like, now which Darmanitan set is this again?
Yeah.
Why does it have 212 in speed there, but this one has 232? Like, what's happening? What's happening over here? Yeah.
Yeah, okay, quick correction. The Southampton Torpedoes are also winless as of week okay. four.
Well, hey.
I thought there was one more.
See, I thought there were two, but there's 24 teams.
Scanning the doc as fast as I could.
I made peace with the fact that I was gonna bungle stuff once in a while when I did these episodes.
That's what the comment section's for.
Yeah. All right. Luckily, it's over on the NPA channel. Yeah. So I can just avoid the comments if I really, really need to. But I will say the NPA fam is pretty chill for the most part.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
That is most appreciated.
I don't think you guys get enough props for that. Because when I did top plays for the GBA, which was relatively well received, and even though this was a couple seasons back, like there were some people that were like, that's not a top play, and that was it. And I was like, well, what does that mean? It was a real mind game. It was real treacherous. I was not a fan. Shout out to you analysts as well. Even if you get a hard time from players or fans or whatever, you're doing good. We appreciate you. That is what it is. Tup. Anything else you got going on?
Not at the moment.
Just hungry for wins.
Yeah.
I dig it.
Fortnite has taken over the majority of my free time outside of Pokemon.
You know, I have heard a lot about that game.
Yeah, and you should try it, just like you should try Overwatch.
I did try Overwatch. Did I not tell you about that?
What?
I did, yeah.
You did not tell me about that.
So, my brother-in-law is Yellow's brother, my brother-in-law.
That's how that works.
I know, right? Family trees, man. He's really big into Overwatch. In fact, I got him the Pharah. Is that her name?
Pharah? The chick that flies and shoots missiles?
Yeah, sure. That sounds about right.
Yeah, that's Pharah.
That's one of his mains. And I got him the BlizzCon exclusive pop figure for him for Christmas.
Oh,
like, that's
nice.
I thought he'd be real, like, pretty jazzed about that.
Yeah.
But he has a squad of guys that he plays with. And so during one of the free weekends, whatever the last one was, two free weekends ago, because I think there was a free one, like, within the
last
couple weeks. It was last
weekend or the weekend before was the last free weekend.
Yeah, it wasn't that one. It was the one before that.
Okay.
But I popped on and I was like, oh, hey, let's do it. Made a Blizzard account. Felt super cool. Got a headache like 5 minutes in from the frame rate. Like it was way too much. I was like, oh my god, dude. I'm used to like playing Pokemon on a 3DS.
A little bit different.
Which I'd not really done any PC gaming before, let alone something at that level.
What kind of nerd are you?
You know, I've often wondered that myself. You know, like I'm probably a weeb. If I had to give myself a thing, I mean, I play Fire Emblem like constantly, right? That's weeb level. That's waifu land.
You're a console and handheld nerd.
Yeah.
PC Master Race, brother.
Well, I mean, I love the Switch, which is basically both of those things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could see that. You're You're a PC guy, right?
For the most part.
Dude, we have to play Rocket League at some point.
Dude, I love Rocket League. We'll do it.
It came out on the Switch, and I think it's cross-platform.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken. I'll double check on that. But that was something that the wife was interested in, too. Because she's into, like, racing stuff. Like, she thinks... I'm going to catch so much heat for this if she hears this. She thinks she's real good at Mario Kart.
Oh, she thinks.
I take her any day of the week. Any day. But that was one of the things that appealed to her in Rocket League, because it was like that, but soccer mixed in with it almost.
Yeah.
So yeah, that
was well, I mean, it's cool. Demolition Derby, but you're playing soccer.
What's not to like
about that, right?
Oh god, dude, I don't know how like Nintendo oriented you are, but they came out with probably like 2 years ago of this Samus off path game. It's kind of like how Mystery Dungeon is a Pokemon game.
Yeah.
This was that to the Metroid series, and it was basically Rocket League.
Oh, nice.
And it got torn apart, dude. Like, nobody liked it. 2 years later, they released Rocket League on the Switch, and everybody loves it.
Yeah.
I think there's a reason for that. Anyway.
It's because there wasn't a fandom behind it going into it.
I mean, everybody wanted, like, a prime reboot or something like that. Yeah. they got Samus League or Samus Rocket League or whatever. Metroid League. We'll call it Metroid League. Anyway, sorry about that. Didn't mean to derail the conversation, but had to bring it up. Guys, I think that's where we're going to wrap up this episode.
We've really skewed off the MPA trail.
I told you guys, prep for casualness in this one, man.
Yeah, you get two old guys talking together with a cup of coffee in their hand. You don't know what's going to happen.
You have coffee, too? I thought that was just me.
No.
Oh, snap. Well, there you go. See, Tub and I have been friends for a while, so this was bound to happen. it's one of those, like, I remember you messaging me, like, back when I said I was going to do this. I was like, oh, it's going to happen, Tub. It needed to happen this week, I think. And we had to get 2 weeks in of just, like, NPA... like stat talk for the most part, so that we could have something much more laid back.
You had to check all your prerequisite boxes so you could have a freebie episode.
I did. Yeah, I was like, all right, let's make sure that people actually think I know what I'm talking about, and then let's have an episode where we just completely skew away from that. Anyway, before I go on another tangent, which is bound to happen, I want to thank you guys for listening. I want to thank Tup for coming on.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
I hope you guys enjoyed this this CantoCast Special Edition MPA Season 4, Weeks 3 and 4. World Man Tup, as always, I am Blue, and I will catch you next time in an all-new episode of CantoCast.